It's 41 minutes after 8 o'clock here on 97.1 Wadsworth Community Radio. And, of course, this time of the year is always American Blind Golf Tournament here in town. And we welcome back in the studio Mark Arnold's here. We've got Mary, Christine, and our friend Devin over there at the end there.
Always good to be back.
Always good to be back, and welcome back again. So welcome, everybody.
Well, thanks.
Thank you.
All right. So, Mark, how's everything going? Give us a little bit of update on how the week's gone. So, of course, the tournament's over, and today's the fun day.
Yeah.
But how the tournament go? I know you were vying for that title yesterday morning at this time. So, how'd that work out for you?
Yeah, you were hanging in there, so I'm eager to know how you finished.
Yeah, we always get this out of the way first, Tina, so you can rub it in and stuff. But
I never rub it in.
I played pretty much as well as I can possibly play. And played Bruce, and Bruce is a former world champion. Yeah. He is a cut above the rest. And match play, I know you guys aren't big golfers, but we took him all the way to 17. So before he closed us out, so we made the turn even. He chipped in for birdie on 10, and we just kept going back and forth. And I was one down with three to play, and on 17 he took that hole, so the match was over. But it was great. As everybody in this area knows, last week, if you'd have asked me what the weather was going to be like, I was thinking we might never play. It's just been so wet around here, but who could imagine the great weather we've had?
Right.
But it was an awesome...
Did I see there were some, the day on Wednesday, there were some eagles out there, huh, as well?
That is just phenomenal. I mean, it's not that I'm bragging about blind golf, but people wonder how this game is played and stuff, but... Bruce Hooper, whom I played, holed out for eagle from 100 yards on the first day. And Phil Blackwell, who is without a doubt the best totally blind player, eagled number three at Hawk's Nest in the first round from about 140 yards.
Wow.
Flew it in the hole.
That's amazing.
Flew it in the hole. So there were great scores out there. Somebody was looking down on us, so the tournament itself was great. Today we are sold out, so today will be a success. There's no rainouts in there, and so we'll make a lot of money for our charities, and people have to be careful out there today. 90 degrees, it's hot.
Yeah, very good. How's the course out there? Pretty good, or is it?
It is just ever improving.
Wow.
It's taking a long time to dry out, as everything is.
Yeah, everything is. Well, very good.
Well, Mark, I wanted to ask you, today is the fun day on the golf course, and if someone has never come to see the blind golfers play, first of all, you should, because it's amazing. But can you talk a little bit about how it works and how you're able to still do so well?
Well, first of all, you basically have to trust yourself and trust your muscle memory. Most all of us have played golf before. We've lost our vision to whatever level, and we play with a coach. And some people have seen our logos, but the coach basically, when I play, he just gives me the basic information, how far. He'll kind of direct me, line me up where we're going to go. He puts the club behind the ball, and he takes two steps back, and I'll make the swing. So it sounds like it takes a long time, but if you've played a lot, it goes quickly. And honestly, we can play the game as quickly as a sighted player. If you work with a specific coach all the time, you know what's going on. But, if some people can see the ball at their feet just a little bit, I'm at the breakoff point where I can catch a little of it. But when you've swung the club all your life and you have your feel for your swing and you gain confidence in the coach putting you in position, you're good to go.
That's really cool. That's amazing. Well, Mark, you've brought some guests in, and there's some guests here, of course, that we introduced coming on. Let's go around the horn and talk to everybody. Mary, what brought you to Wadsworth here this year? I know you speak for Wounded Warriors, and I believe you spoke last night. So tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
Yes, I'm from Albuquerque, New Mexico. I live actually in Rio Rancho, so flew in for this event, and I've never been to a blind golf course, I mean, to get me on a golf course, you'd have to teach me how to golf first.
See, I'm the same way. I've been out there with these guys over a couple of years taking pictures and stuff. I've never hit a golf ball in my life. Yeah.
But I am impressed, you know, with what Mark just said, because you think about the senses and how now he has a unique, almost an advantage, because he knows his stroke, he knows his clubs, he knows how far, like in his mind. So I'm visualizing it already in my head, so I can't wait to get out there, Mark. This is going to be amazing. You know, so that's what brought me, you know, to Wadsworth, and what a great community you guys have here. So I'm a Gold Star mother. I lost my son to the war in Iraq. I took care of him for 2 years and 5 months before his death. And a lot of times, you know, people have a choice. You can either sit in darkness or realize why you lived through something, you know, why you were able to get on the other side and say, wait a minute, I realize this is no longer about me and Daniel, but this is about everybody Daniel knows. This was his life. He was in the military, in the army. He was a helicopter electrician, and as my boys would banter, nothing happens to those guys in aviation. They're in the safest place, you know? And I would be, as a mother, like, I don't care if you're in the green zone, you're in danger. But mom knows nothing about war when it comes to young men. but you know, we survived it as a family, and today, to be a speaker for a Wounded Warrior Project is probably the grandest platform a mother could ever ask for, to go anywhere across the nation, raise awareness about our warriors and what they go through. And, you know, we have a video online that's called A Mother's Love that was done by the New York Times, and sometimes I show that at events. It's meant for adult audiences. It's not meant for children. But I just think to myself, this video of our time at Kessler Rehab in New Jersey, which was also unusual. We were able to go to a private facility, being military, but we fought for that, and we had that opportunity. We went there, and everything that we learned was eye-opening. Just to take someone from a complete coma and allow them to have a semi-conscious state, never having another conversation with him, but always hearing your favorite word, mom, you know, is just so rewarding in itself. And I just think to myself, these guys are young. I mean, they're 19, 22 years old, you know, and when they're injured, and we have that responsibility now. They went to action for us. They come home. We need to go into action about taking care of them. And it is about the private sector, just rallying the communities, making a difference in their lives. And that's where my heart is.
Well, now that we're all teary-eyed over here, these stories get me every time. But I'm so sorry for your loss, and I thank your son for his service. So thank you.
I thank you.
What I wanted to ask is, and I think you're amazing. I think both of the families, the Shy family and your family, just amazing. All of the awareness that you're bringing out of, you know, love and loss is really a beautiful thing. Wanted to just jump back to Mark for a second, because if anyone's wondering, well, how does the Blind Golf Championship and how does the Wounded Warrior Project come together, there is a specific reason.
Well, told the story a few times, but when I played in the charity scramble down in San Antonio back in 2011, I had asked my partner Bruce if I could play with some of the warriors. They always vote, invite a few warriors up that are at Brooks Army Medical Center, BAMC, and that's when I met Devin, and we played 18 holes together, and I don't know, sometimes there's a click, a bond, whatever you want to call it. We seemed to get along, and we just had a great time playing golf and shooting the breeze, and on the way home, I talked to my coach and said, why don't we make them part of our charitable endeavors, when, you know, let's raise some money from them, and along with our student adaptive technology program, and a nice sponsor down in Texas flew Devin and Stetson up, and that was the year they were grand marshals of the parade, and Devin lit the match. Yeah. And the town was very nice. Had a great time. Rolling Thunder brought him in all the way from the Cleveland airport, and it was a great day. But just simply, and you know, I don't need to go into details, but my heart is with the, you know, the VFW. I grew up on the floor of the VFW and the Legion when I was a kid, and, you know, son of a World War II veteran and all that stuff. So it was just a match made in heaven. And Devin has been here every year. Stetson's only missed a year. Mm-hmm. And so it's just amazing that they have been as devoted, if that's too strong of a word, to us. But it's great.
Well, Devin, you know, and again, we'll take it right over to you here. Of course, Christine's in with you here. Oh, so yeah. So talk a little bit about this, this bond that you guys have, obviously. But,
well, the bond goes way back.
Yeah.
back to the womb.
Yeah, since Christine is mom, right,
but my
still,
mother,
yeah.
And, yes, so she's a caregiver to my brother, and I know Mark has been very adamant about wanting to meet her. He got to meet my father not too long ago, and he's been begging me to meet my mom and follows her on Facebook and everything, and he really, really wanted her up here to acknowledge what she has done and kind of just be part of the family again. And my mom's heard me talk about American Blind Golf, since 2012, you know. Mm-hmm. Every time I come home from American Blind Golf, I've got stories to tell and talk about how Mark force fed me food and beer and got me in trouble again. But no, it's awesome to have my mom come up here and see what I've been doing and what Eric has participated in, from the painting last year and
the balloon ride.
Yep, the balloon ride, and did so well, and my mom really wanted to be up here and be part of the whole festivities of American Blind Golf and meet the people that I consider family up here.
So, Christine, what's your first impression here? That you know, I know you haven't seen all everything going on today, but what do you think?
Well, first off, I lived in Minnesota for 12 years, so it's kind of great to be back in the Midwest and see a lot of green instead of 50 Shades of Brown.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. The people are so supportive, and everybody is so polite and gracious and respectful. And I can't wait to see how these people with their, what I call, abilities going to hit the golf ball, because I for sure can't. Hand-eye coordination is non-existent for me. So I'm looking forward to seeing that, and I hope I can share my story so to make, you know, everybody aware how awesome this group is, and hopefully we'll have a lot of fun.
Well, you know, could you share a little bit of your story, of course, because, you know, your family was hit twice with the injuries in the war. So share a little bit about, you know, of course, Devin and brother and everything else, your other son, of what your family has had to endure, and again the support that you received from Wounded Warrior Project.
Yeah, my oldest son Eric was on his second tour in Iraq, and he was a 50 cal gunner, and he was hit by a sniper and was shot through the head by armor-piercing bullet. He was severely injured. It's a severe brain injury. They didn't think he was going to survive, or if he would survive to be an open-eye coma for the rest of his life, and he proved everybody wrong. Yes, he is in a wheelchair. He needs help with everything. He needs to be fed and dressed and washed and assisted with everything, but he has the biggest smile on his face every single day. He is talking. It's difficult to understand, but he understands everything. He has a wicked sense of humor. Him and his brother, oh boy. they still go at each other and tease each other and call each other names, and sometimes I'm like, wow, I need earplugs here. So he's recovering. He has proved everybody wrong. He's still working hard every single day. And so that was in October 2005. He was injured. My son Devin joined, as you probably heard his story, he joined in 2008, and he was in Afghanistan in 2010 and was injured there. So yes, that was a difficult second phone call, for sure. But when I heard his voice, I knew we were going to be okay. Because I'm like, we can deal with a lost limb if that's what we have to deal with. But these brain injuries are quite ugly. And my heart goes out to all these families who deal with this every single day. But our family's thriving, and I also have a daughter that I can't forget to mention. No, she will not serve in the military. We will duct tape her down. She is going to start her second year at University of New Mexico and wants to be a nurse. It has affected our family, for sure. I think it made us stronger. It made us closer. We have our ugly days, just like everybody else. But Wounded Warrior Project has stepped up to the plate with so many different things. Currently, I won't go on too big of a story, but currently the programs that help my son is, he used to be a great artist. He used to draw a lot. Well, when you are, I don't want to call it paralyzed, but you have very limited movement, you can't hold a pencil anymore. You can't hold a brush anymore. So we found someone who works with his abilities, and he is in art therapy and music therapy, and we work around what he can do and help him in the system. So he loves everything, and this is a program that the Wounded Warrior Project is paying for. He also has a trust fund set up for him that is a big relief for us, because we're getting older. We don't know how long we're going to be able to help him. And to be honest, I don't want this burden to go to my children. And I know that they don't consider it a burden. I know they love them, but they need to live their lives.
And you know, I know that that's one support that Wounded Warrior gives too, because it's, you know, and this is in any kind of palliative care. Some, you know, the caregiver's health sometimes, or a lot of times, deteriorates quicker than the person you're trying to help, because their care sometimes is 24 hours a day. You still need to sleep. And you know, their sleep patterns can be affected. Their medical needs, they're not on a 9-to-5 time period anymore. And so, you know, that kind of family support is very, very important to keep the caregivers around.
Yeah, and that's for sure. And my health has suffered. I do have an autoimmune disease called scleroderma, and it has been a struggle. And it's hard to make the me time, for sure. But there was a couple caregiver retreats that I was able to go to that really helped for a weekend to get away and just relax and get pampered. And I think the biggest thing was to talk to other caregivers who are wearing the same shoes and compare notes, hug, laugh, cry together. And that these weekends are always pretty neat, you know. So,
would that be your biggest advice to someone, and even someone listening whose son or daughter or loved one hasn't suffered an injury from a war per se, but where someone is the caretaker? Would that be your biggest piece of advice for someone listening who is in the caretaker position, to get involved with you know, a caretaker group, to get some time for yourself too?
I really think so. You know, even if it's just a cup of coffee and just talk about your day, or even if you just do something fun together, like a massage, or you know, just to go out and have fun, to do something, cooking class. I mean, that me time is really important, and to not to isolate yourself. And I'm really guilty of that. I do isolate myself quite easily.
What, Devin? What kind of golf you got? You had, tell us a little bit about you had a little bit of some surprises here in the last year with your life, haven't you?
Yeah, got this kid showed up at my house one day and refused to leave, and just keeps crying in the morning. I had my first son back in November,
right.
And couldn't be happy. Named him Reagan Thomas Shai, named after the greatest president, Ronald Reagan. And couldn't be happier. Got engaged, so I did a big reveal, and like a true combat engineer, I had to blow something up. So I had to blow something up to reveal what gender my kid was, and it couldn't be happier. You know, I was super excited to have a boy and carry on my last name, and that was a big concern of our families, because of me and my brother are the last ones to carry on the name, and with my brother's condition, it's unlikely that he's ever going to have a child. But So I nailed it the first time.
Never know. Yeah, but, he's proved you wrong lots of times.
Yes, right. He has. But you never know. So, but I was very excited, and we couldn't be happier with where my life is at now. The woman that I'm about to marry in September is definitely keeps me grounded, puts me in my place where I need to be. She's a 5 foot feisty little thing, and I've never met a woman that really put me in my place and shuts me up. So she keeps me speechless quite often, and anybody who's ever met me, it doesn't happen very often.
Well, I was going to say, Mark, somebody was able to put a lid on him
She's an amazing woman. But I also wanted to bring up something that a lot of you might not know is actually my mom and Mary go a lot further back as well, is when Mary brought Daniel down to Albuquerque, New Mexico for rehab and to get him back home. Mama T was not only taking care of Daniel, but also building a house. And fortunately, my brother was in the same hospital as Daniel, and a nurse came up, and I don't want to ruin the story or anything, but I believe a nurse came up and said, there's someone worse than Eric. And my mom knew that she needed to be there for that family. And they become best friends, and my mom talks about having that me time and taking time to find that caregiver. And having someone like Mary be a best friend of my mom is truly a blessing, because Mary's been through both. Mary's been through the caregiving and 24/7 traveling with Daniel, living in a hospital just like my mom did. And for them to have that bond, and my mom doesn't bring it up very often, but they go to Starbucks once a week. I think it's like once a week, but they spend time together. And like my mom said, it is a necessity for them to bond and talk. And they don't always talk about the injuries and stuff like that.
I know, we talk about you.
There's a lot to talk about. But Mary's story is truly phenomenal. Mary also is a caregiver for my brother when my mom is traveling or needs help or anything. You know, when Mama T watches my brother for a week, Eric usually gains some weight because Mama.
Oh my God! Mama, yes, I get in so much trouble, you know. And he does love Mexican food.
Oh,
Christine.
so you're like the grandma that comes and spoils the gravy.
Oh my
you
God!
You can come in and feed him and then leave him and go home.
And his father loves to grill. So if all I have to do is create side dishes.
Oh,
Eric. She went to Germany one time, and when she got back, Eric was 10 pounds heavy.
Oh.
It took her a long time to forgive me.
Yeah, you roll his butt around.
We did roll his butt around. You know, so one of the things that I want to share also is that as caregivers, what I've noticed about my friends across the nation, they're all coming down with autoimmune diseases, whether it's, you know, scleroderma or just depression,
lupus.
I mean, it's it just really caught my attention how everyone is succumbing to something that's, you know, really pulling on their bodies, on their minds, on their entire system. And I just think like that cup of coffee at Starbucks with somebody you know locally is so simple, you know. And Christine can come in and tell me anything she wants to tell me, and that's it. It's just between the two of us, and life goes on, you know. But it's critical. It's critical that a community realize how lonely we are, because our friends are afraid to come over, not knowing what to say about our son or daughter. You know, everybody who was cheering you on just kind of dissipates into air, and you're left there. And if you're in your home all the time taking care of this one person, you are beginning that isolation process, and you are beginning to affect your mind, your body, your soul, everything. So it's important that these people get out, men and women, get out and go to a movie, go to a cup of coffee in their community, join a club of some kind, you know. Was it Zumba?
Yes.
Yeah.
Zumba. Oh, there we go.
See? So get yourself moving and active out there. So if you're sitting at home with someone you love because you're taking such good care of them, take better care of yourself, because you won't be able to keep the engines revved unless you do.
Mm-hmm. But it is hard sometimes, because I take care of Eric. So if I don't have someone to watch over him, I can't do that cup of coffee. You know, right. So if I only can go when Eric has therapy.
When there's somebody, right.
Yeah, so a lot of times if they call in sick or can't make it or they need my help, with a special therapy, then I can't go. Mm-hmm.
I think the biggest frustration I see sometimes with Christine is having to wait for people to come to do what it is that they're supposed to do at her home. Mm-hmm. You know, and you're literally just waiting. And, you know, in the meantime, you know, life goes on. You know, Eric needs help, needs to be fed, needs to be washed, whatever. And that fills your day. And I think that the services that are out there for our families need to know, like, we're waiting on you. We're literally waiting on you because this is important to us. And you know, God help them because they try their best. But sometimes it's not good enough. And I think that if we could rev that engine, that part of the mechanism up, life would just be a little bit more smoother.
Mm-hmm. Tina, go ahead. What did you have?
I wanted to ask you one last question. I don't know if Christine, Mary, and Devin all would want to answer this or just one of the three of you. But you mentioned something that really broke my heart. People who may have been friends before, were cheering you on before, kind of dissipate because they don't know what to do now that Eric has different abilities. What should people do? You know, what should your friends continue to do to help? It can you maybe help? It's not a stigma. That's not the word that I'm looking for. But I don't know if awkwardness is the right word either. But how do you kind of break the ice, or how do you continue, you know, this relationship?
I'm still Christine. My life situation has changed, but I'm still me. I still need that hug. I still need the talk. I still need the companionship. But I do, you know, I will not be an empty nester. And a lot of homes, in my case, are not wheelchair accessible. I can't visit anymore. So if you don't go out of your way to knock on my door to come in, I'm stuck. Mm-hmm. So I'm still me. Don't treat me any different.
So there's really, you know, there's no wrong way really to reach. The wrong thing to do is to not reach out.
To ignore, be afraid.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. One of the things I was going to say is that with Daniel, because he was in a semi-conscious state and we were exercising him and we were, you know, even using walking simulators with him, when things like that happened, what I would do openly in a room full of people is say, there you are. Remember, he is 23 years old. He used to play football. He loves to run. He's competitive. And he has the driest sense of humor that would drive you crazy. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like to let people know who he is, because they forget, or they're so caught up with what has happened with him, you know. And they need stimulation also. You know, we definitely need stimulation, but that person is still in that chair and very aware. Eric is so aware. You know, he calls his brother a putz. You know, he's just, he's so cute. He just laughs. And initially when I met him, he would blow kisses until I told him, you know, that guy got a little jealous that you blew a kiss at his wife.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
and he would start laughing, and I'm like...
And then he says, I don't care.
I don't care.
I don't care. Go ahead. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead. Hit the guy in the wheelchair. Yeah, right? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, go for it. Yeah.
I can take him.
Yeah.
Coming as someone who was injured, one of my biggest pet peeves was it felt like people were talking down to me. I might be injured, I might have some type of disability, but do not talk down to me. I'm still a regular person. yes, I've changed mentally a little bit, but I'm still the same person. And as far as like my brother, my biggest pet peeve when people talk to anybody in a wheelchair is they do that cheerleader pose and they go down and try to talk to you.
Yeah.
Oh, stop. Just stand up. Just talk to me like a regular human being, and I always acknowledge that they're in the room. For people like Daniel and my brother, yes, they're in the wheelchair, and yes, they don't talk as much, and they're not going to be able to move as much and engage in conversation as much, but do not exclude them from the conversation. When you're talking and asking my brother what he needs and what they need, ask him. Don't ask my mom. Ask him. He's a grown-up. He's a big boy. He might not be able to do everything a big boy does, but hey, you know, he's still all there. He needs to make his own decisions, and I think that's, like, the biggest thing is really... things have changed. Adapt just like they have to adapt. Find your new normal with that person because they're trying to find their new normal. Mm-hmm. And just really just keep talking to them and be there as much as they can. Because when I came back, I felt like everybody was looking at me and everybody was staring at me when in fact I was the one that was looking at everybody else, assuming that they were staring at me and judging me. And then they weren't. They had no reason to. I look like a regular normal person. I look like a veteran, you know, tattoos, mm-hmm. beard, you know, look dressing with American flag everywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm just a regular person just like everybody else. And I've always respected people that, you know, talk to me just like a normal person. Don't talk down to me and don't be scared to ask me questions. I'll answer anything and I'll let you know if it's a dumb question. Mm-hmm. I promise.
I think great advice. Thank you so much. It was so great to get to chat with all of you this morning. Boy, just four wonderful people in the studio. Absolutely amazing.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks again. Well, thanks, we appreciate it. All right. Have fun today. Okay. It's 11 minutes after 9 o'clock here on 97.1 Wadsworth Community Radio.